I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is going to sound crazy, but I'm going to take my bra off.
That's fine. You make yourself comfortable.
So I don't often wear bras. I thought today I'd make an effort, but it's the end of the day, you know.
Whoop. Whoop.
Do you wear a bra?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Do you? These days, I literally never wear one. And now I find them so uncomfortable.
Really? Mm. I think make yourself at home. Make yourself comfortable.
I am.
Especially for what we're doing today.
Yeah. Get it all out.
Get it all out.
Sorry.
Oh, dear. What are we doing today?
Well, I think things are a bit different today, aren't
things
they?
Things are a little bit different today.
I'm going to be in the hot seat. You're interviewing me.
I am.
Well, we're going to converse.
Yeah, we're going to have a chat. We thought that today it would be nice to have a chat about Jaguar's career and what she's been doing, because it is amazing and it's worth speaking about. And often you're the one asking the questions, the one shining a spotlight on other people and other people's successes and other people's work. And today I thought it would be nice for us to shine a little light on all of your great successes.
Oh my God. I'm literally dying. Like, now I know how it feels when I do these intros for people.
I haven't even done your intro.
Oh no!
I actually wrote one. I've actually written one.
Okay.
I'm a bit nervous to do this intro now. I feel like I've got to do it justice. I am so excited to welcome today's guest into the studio. She's an award-winning BBC Radio 1 presenter. She's a killer DJ, a label boss, and an industry change maker. You might know her for her killer selections and high energy feel-good DJ sets, or for her work improving dance music for the better, championing new artists, supporting women, trans and non-binary artists, and speaking up for LGBTQ+ and black artists. One of my favourite DJs and a top gal. You might ask, how does she have time for all of this? I have no idea. Welcome to the studio, Jaguar!
Oh, that's so nice. Am I really one of your favourite DJs?
Yeah, definitely.
I paid her. I'll give you the money later.
Yeah.
I'll slip you a fiver.
I tell a lot of people they're one of my favourite DJs.
You know, you do.
Yeah.
No, that's very sweet. Very sweet.
I thought it would be nice to take it all the way back to the start. You're from a place that not very many people are from.
Yeah.
It's an island called Alderney.
Good knowledge. Yes. Alderney is a very remote place. And what I've found is, like, people either have never heard of it, which is most people. And then you'll also have people like Lapsley, of all people, who are like, yeah, I've been there. And I'm like, how have you ended up in Alderney, which is like in the middle of the channel, there's 2,000 people and like no one really knows what it is, you know?
I actually Googled the population.
Yeah.
It's 2,141 people.
Yeah.
London has a population of 9.982 million. So I did some maths and that makes London 4,600 times bigger, more than 4,600 times bigger than Alderney. So where you're from is... It's a tiny place, right?
Yeah, it's so small and it's like 3 miles long.
Yeah.
And my parents grew up, my parents moved over there when I was like 6 months old. My older brother was like 3, 4. So yeah, it's a crazy place. And my school, for context, when I my school in Alderney, at one point there were like 30 kids there.
Wow.
So
that's like a class size. That's a class.
Yeah. And actually,
some of my classes were bigger than that. Some of my classes at school were like 35
your
kids.
Your school was probably bigger than the population of where I'm from.
Yeah, my college would have been.
Mine was as well, because I ended up going to school in England. But I was recently back in Alderney, literally last week. And I have to say, I really appreciate what it is and what it's given me and how I can feel going back there. And I feel like nostalgia is a really powerful thing. I think everyone's relationship with it is different, but I have a really like positive relationship with going home and association. And I feel like for me going back this August was, it's going to sound lame, but like really healing and like my spirit feels nourished and I felt really, really good. I'm really grateful to like be in nature, see my childhood friends, like cycle around because I still can't drive. So I'm like cycling around my old haunts and like being with my brothers, and there's these feelings and like smells of like certain flowers that grow there and like the like things that you know so well.
Yeah.
How it can take you back to like being 5 years old is incredible. And it was a very unique experience, like going to school there. I was talking to my friend and about how it's kind of impacted and shaped us as adults now, like growing up in such a small place. And, you know, playing outside was a big thing, climbing trees, like making potions, going to the beach. Like, we were quite like, there wasn't much to do. Like, you couldn't go bowling on the weekend, or if you went to the cinema, the films back then, you'd probably get them 6 months later and you wouldn't get all the films you wanted to see. So it was obviously very isolating.
Yeah.
But I have such amazing memories of like playing games outside and doing all these amazing things. And my imagination, I feel like, was really
like, active.
And like there was room to like use that because we didn't have much.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I can see actually how that kind of has like influenced you in a way of like you're able to see things in a creative way.
Mm.
And like, I don't know, like make your own fun.
Yeah, we definitely did. And I often did. And actually, as I got a bit older, I remember, it sounds a bit sad. I don't know if maybe it was sad. I do actually have also a lot of like loneliness when I think back to my childhood. And I don't know, like my parents split up when I was 3. My older brother, he went to boarding school when he was 11. So I was like 7. So I think at the time, I think I definitely missed him a lot. And I think I remember, I do remember feeling lonely as well.
Yeah.
Weirdly.
What kind of music were you listening to around this time?
So music was...
Music's a huge companion for people.
It was a huge thing for me. I remember, I think my first like album, like CD was, it was probably either Gwen Stefani, Love Angel, Music Baby, or Black Eyed Peas, Ellie Funk.
Oh. Love that album.
But equally, I went through a huge Evanescence phase there.
Bring me up, bring me up inside.
I remember like one side of the house was like my brother's bedroom and my bedroom, and then my mom was like the other side, and I used to have this like blue, this like electric blue like CD player. Ugh, my pride and joy. Loved it. And I'd like put the CD on, blasted all the way up, and I'd be like screaming, like 8-year-old me, rocking out to Evanescence. My mum would just like close the door.
Was it probably one of those CD players you could like carry around with you?
Oh yeah.
Oh, those were the best.
And actually,
do you remember having a tape player? I remember having a tape player when I was really small, which is mad. That feels like it shouldn't have been in our lifetimes.
I know.
It's crazy, isn't it?
I did have a tape player. I also have a very fond memory of sitting in the bathtub listening to two songs. Mm-hmm. One, ABBA, Money, Money, Money. And then, even now, and listen, I'm
That's
not...
That's a great bath song.
I know,
song.
It's bizarre. I don't know what compilation this was, by the way. Yeah. And I'm not, I do find ABBA quite, it does kind of like, destroy my soul a little bit. But that one song in particular, I will be like, okay, twist my arm. God, I sound really cool, don't I? Talking about ABBA 10 minutes in. But, and then the other song was Mulan Reflections. You know, when she's like, when will my reflection... You know that song?
I've actually never watched Mulan.
What?
I really need to watch it. I know. Every time... I always get that reaction every time I say that. I know I need to watch it.
It's like the best one. I personally think it's one of the best classic Disney films. So like, I guess what I'm trying to say is music, it did really like affect me, and I loved it and I clung to it and I found a lot of like inspiration and like love and stuff. I'd listen to albums front to back, read all the lyrics, learn all the lyrics.
Oh my God, I forgot about doing that.
With the CD.
You'd get the little, in a CD, booklet. You'd get a booklet at the front and you'd read it. I remember doing that.
Yeah.
Wow. And it was on the back of that booklet, it would say where you could buy the songs for like your phone as like a ringtone or like, do you remember that?
Like the polyphonic versions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, times have really changed. Technology is crazy the way it's moved forward.
It's nice to talk about those early times.
Yeah.
So like, I remember when I got an iPod, I think I was 10, I got an iPod for Christmas and it was like, I was so excited because it felt like the cutting edge technology.
Yeah, yeah.
And burning all these CDs, and I used to love like making all my playlists, and like I think at one point I had a playlist for like every day of the week, and then I'd have like my going to bed playlist, my gym playlist, my, you know, and I was always the person, because then I actually went to boarding school when I was 10 in like Hampshire, because in the Channel Islands there's not really many options for school.
Yeah,
I said there are 30 kids at my school, so some kids either you all get up and move, or some kids go to Guernsey and like stay with a family if you can, like go to boarding school. There was a school that went up to GCSEs at the time on the island, but you know, my mum was like classic West African mum being like, education is so important. So
yeah,
that's what we did. But at school, my iPod was, it was the shit, man.
Yeah.
We'd have Tenacious D, we'd have Daft Punk, we'd have Timbaland, Shock Value One, we'd have Avril, we'd have Evanescence.
It's funny.
Kelly Rowland, Jamelia, Beyonce.
We saw Kelly Rowland this summer as well, didn't we? And Jamelia.
Oh, yeah, Mighty Hoopla was like, again, it says a lot about me.
Jahlil was singing all of the words to Jamelia as well.
The best thing about that Jamelia performance, and I'll say it off my chest, is she was meant to play for like 55 minutes, which is a long set at the best of times for any artist. Jamelia, she did about 25 minutes and then played Superstar and was like, way! And she was like,
oh, can we do that again?
We've got a bit of time left. We're going to do Superstar again. Everyone was like, yeah!
It was so good.
Twice in a row.
Yeah.
That's icon.
That was a highlight of the summer, actually.
I think it's highlight of the year for me.
Yeah. I think it's funny what you were saying about playlists.
Yeah.
And like how much care we used to put into those, because that's like, I mean, to make it a little bit wanky, that's like early curation,
taste
isn't it?
Tastemakers, darling.
It kind of is, though. Like, it, that idea of, like, even if it's just for yourself, just, like, putting tunes together.
Yeah.
And, like, I think clicking with a mood and an energy with music in a way, like, I think some people just don't connect with music in that way and don't have that emotional connection with it. So it's, like, it's nice to hear that. And I think also it's so tied up in, like you were saying about going home, like nostalgia. The way those songs will just transport you back
always.
Is incredible. When did you first start listening to dance music?
So I think it kind of, so I have an older brother who I've mentioned. He's like my musical hero. He would love me to say that. But no, he's actually got such a good taste in music. He's just good at everything. And he was obviously my hero growing up. He's 4 years older than me. And I'd always like make him like, you know, I was that annoying sister. I was like, can you please like put all your music on my iPod? Like, can you do this? Can you help me with this? So like he put all his stuff on. So yeah, it'd be a mixture of like Kanye and then like Daft Punk and then like all these dance classics from like, you know, the like Clubland. And so like I'd have like, you know, Daft Punk, Armin van Helden, like kind of like trancey classics, like, you know, ATB till I come. And I also, when I was younger, I used to go to the youth club in Alderney, because my mum, for some reason, was the youth leader at one point. So I used to go, I was like the youngest one there. And I just remember like that distinct memory of ATB till I come, like always being on, again, it was probably like Now 43 or something.
Yeah.
And like loads of those, like Fatboy Slim, those like noughties, 90s tunes. And I feel like those tunes as well are very big in Alderney, because we also have like quarry parties and bunker parties, which like are just events that we throw. And there's lots of German bunkers in the Channel Islands from World War II. So that's, we have these bunker parties, which have been happening probably since like the 90s, I'm guessing. I don't know. So I used to, like, I remember the first time I went to a bunker party, I snuck out when I was 14. It's classic me, is like, I'm just gonna sneak out, no one will know. 2,000 people on the island, like obviously someone saw me, and then to my dad the next day was like, oh, you know, Jaggy was at the bunker. And then my dad was like, were you there? And I was like, I wasn't there, it was obviously so. And it was like, I mean,
I know
who else was it gonna be
there, yeah.
Yeah, so I got into like dance music from a younger age, I would say. Like, it was definitely around, but I wasn't aware of, like, necessarily what it was, DJ culture, what it would mean to me. And but I was, like, avidly just listening to so much music because I just loved music. But I'd say very contemporary stuff, you know.
What was it like going from Alderney and boarding school, which I imagine was a fairly sheltered, was boarding school a fairly sheltered environment? Like,
so
quiet? I don't know.
It's a very interesting one. And, you know, I'm also very aware it's a very, like, privileged thing to do. Like, it costs money to send your kids to a boarding school. And, like, it's, I personally wouldn't send my kids to a boarding school because I think it's good for some things. And, like, I'm actually really lucky. The first school I went to, which is in this place called Lymington in Hampshire, it was a really small school. It was a really lovely school. Like, everyone was very close. Had a lot of international students, which was really cool. Like, there were kids from Spain. I had my friend Bundy from Nigeria and a couple kids from Zambia. And it was really cool, like, because I was from the Channel Islands, which is a very white area. But then at this school, I actually had black friends and, like, friends from all over, which was really cool. And, like, I think at the time, obviously not aware of these things as, like, a 10-year-old, but it was actually very important to have those bonds with those kids. And it was a really lovely school, actually. And so, but of course you feel like you miss out, like, you miss your parents, and then you're kind of at school on the weekends. But then they would plan excursions. You'd go to the cinema, or you'd, I don't know, go play in the forest or something. But I think it taught me a lot of things. Like, when I went to boarding school, I was 10 as a young age, right?
And that's so young.
I remember being painfully shy.
Yeah.
And actually, I spoke to a few of my friends at home and I was like, were you shy? Because a couple of my friends, like, moved to England when they were a bit older for schools and stuff. And they were like, yeah, we were really, really shy.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wonder if that's because we just didn't meet anyone for, like, the first 10 years of our lives, really.
I mean, I went to just, like, a normal school that is basically down the road from my house. Mm. And I remember being terrified to go when I was 11. Like, it's scary when you're that age. So I can't imagine what it would be like to be put on a plane and
off you go.
Go to another country.
Yeah. Oh, it's really interesting. And I think if things had been different, I think I would be very different now. Like, I think it's like nature versus nurture. Yeah. But I think naturally as a person, I am actually very shy. And used to be introverted, but I've learned to adapt extroverted behaviours.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm an extroverted introvert. I definitely have both qualities. I know how to use both.
I can actually see that for you, because I would say you're very personable and chatty, but you're not necessarily screaming out for constant socialising and, like, constant attention.
No. I mean, I can be a lot. I can be a lot, but I actually am quite shy.
Yeah.
And maybe difficult to properly get to know. I don't know. Am I? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
We're too young to be able to answer those questions about ourselves. I feel like we're still learning those things. I don't know.
Always evolving.
Yeah.
Which is good.
But what was it like going from Alderney and a life at boarding school to Leeds? I can imagine you went to uni in Leeds. I can imagine that was a massive jump, was it?
Yeah. So I'm quite an independent spirit, I would say. And I think it's partly who I am, and again, part of my experiences. But because I kind of essentially left home when I was 10 and then went to my first school, then my secondary school, which I wasn't really a fan of, but got through. Went to college, which I loved because there's more freedom from what I was used to with, like, boarding school, college in Winchester. And then I just couldn't wait to get to uni, to be honest. Like, got through school. I like school. I was a good student. I was pretty obedient and, like, quite academic. Didn't do any creative GCSEs.
Did you not?
No, I really wanted to do music. But my school, it was very, like, academic focus. And also, like, unless you were, like, grade 8 everything.
Yeah.
Or, like, they were like, oh, you wouldn't be good at this, or you wouldn't.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. You shouldn't tell kids not to try something. Because I was kind of musical. Like, I did do, like, piano early on, like, you know, and I'd like learn little songs on the piano. I used to write little songs, and then I did learn the oboe for a bit.
No way. I want to see the photo evidence.
It was actually a horrible photo that they put on the front of like the school flyer, probably to tick some diversity box. And it's like me, like full. I was in the junior band, hated it. But I did like music. And like, yeah. as I said, I was very affected by music. I was also obsessed with Final Fantasy X soundtrack, which is like the most beautiful collection of like classical music. And I, even now, when I'm like stressed or anxious, I do still put on those songs and used to learn them on the piano. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I didn't do any musical GCSEs. And so I didn't know what, really what to do, but I did really enjoy English. Like, I loved reading, loved writing. I used to write a lot creatively. I had a very cringe like creative writing blog back in the day. I used to write poems. So I thought maybe I'll be like a writer or something.
Yeah. You still hold some aspiration to write, don't you? Like,
yeah.
You still speak sometimes about maybe in like your later career writing a book or...
Yeah, I really want to. I've definitely been writing a lot more in my journals and like diaries and stuff, because I used to, again, from the age, as young as I can remember, I'd always write a journey, but it would be like, I fancy this person, or like, yeah. my mum's pissed me off. But always, always.
I write a diary as well.
Do you?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
How often do you write in yours?
I go through phases, yeah. but it's pretty sporadic.
Same.
Like, sometimes I'll do it like 3 days in a row and then I won't do it again for like 6 months.
Yeah.
I usually write in my diary when I'm feeling a bit shit, and I use it as a way of like writing yes. those feelings yeah. down. And so reading it back is like not always that nice, but then it's also not even necessarily like a comment on how I'm feeling in the like wider time. It's just how I maybe felt that day and I just wanted to get it out. And then
yeah,
it ends up being this like really depressing book of just like all of my worst moments. But then that is the stuff that we usually don't share with anyone. So it's like nice to be able to express it in a way.
Yeah. And I used to do exactly that. And I think as a teenager, you know, like I didn't really like my school that much. Like even just being like, bit just even looking back, it's like, there's this thing that my like therapist told me about called like minority stress, which is like, obviously says what it is on the tin, like being a minority in a situation causes yeah. all these extra like levels of stress. And I think going to like a school that was like quite pretentious and like academic and pressure, but also like being like one of the only black people there.
Yeah.
And like just loads yeah. of things, like real like misogyny, and like just some of those schools are just very traditional but in a very bad way. And I think
yeah
I could feel it pressing down on me. I felt very constricted there, and when I was with my friends I was okay, but like, I didn't feel like I could be me. And like realizing that I was gay and like loads of things, like I really relied on yeah. my diary for like my own introspection, but also like expression.
I think anything that makes you feel different as a kid is really difficult, and I think can make you feel very like lonely and isolated.
Yeah.
I totally see that. But back to Leeds.
Leeds, sorry.
You started DJing at Leeds.
Yeah,
that was your first
introduction
to DJing.
Yes.
So that's maybe where you started to really find your feet with a passion.
Correct. So I got to Leeds. It was my top choice because I heard the nightlife was amazing. And yeah, from the age of 14, I was very passionate about getting drunk and going out. I didn't care what it was.
Yeah,
I was out there. I'd have still like a potion of like whiskey, brandy, vodka, anything from like my dad or my mum's little alcohol thing. And it would
take
like
a little bit from each one.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, they won't know.
Yeah. yeah.
And it would be like brown, and then maybe like top it off with like some Red Bull, and off we go in a little water bottle.
Red Bull, oh,
I know, yeah. disgusting. But I used to go out a lot,
yeah.
like every in the summer. I was wild, like just out all the time. I just liked it.
My best mate went to Leeds, and it is just a playground. Like there's so many good nights out there. I feel like anything goes. It's one of those places where people just let themselves get loose.
It is. It's the city of dreams. I think the size of it is really good. It's not too big, but then there's a real community within so many different aspects of yeah. the creative industry. There's loads of different universities and young people, and the artists, DJs, musicians, live music is all sick. So going there, I did English literature, And for some reason, the first thing I did was I decided I wanted to try out radio. I used to listen to like Radio 1 and stuff, but I'd never really thought, oh, I could be in the radio or on the radio. But my friend was like, you should try student radio. It's really fun. I did it last year. So I was like, okay. So literally day one of freshers.
Yeah.
Walked in. I think I went straight to like over. The classic like Leeds vintage kilo sale and bought yeah. loads of vintage, you know what students are like.
Especially there's a certain yeah. look about a Leeds student.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys love a
vintage, like a plaid shirt or like a sports,
bomber jacket,
sports jacket.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. Sports jacket. Yeah, yeah.
Always. And then, yeah, I tried it out, went to the thing, wrote my name down, applied for a radio show, and then I did a Friday night show called Dangerous Jag.
Dangerous Jag.
Every week. I was so excited when I got the, like, they were like, yeah, well, you can do a show. It was yeah. like 9 or 10 p.m. on a Friday, and I'd go in and do it live. I'd like prepare all my notes, write a script, edit, listen back straight away, edit things in audition.
Yeah.
Maybe even Audacity at the time. Don't know how that program even works, but yeah, used to really loved editing audio. Then I would start interviewing people and I just got super into it. And was just playing anything that I liked from like, I guess like dancey stuff. Cause I was going out, I guess it was like 2013 at the time. So like disclosure-y things and like Deep House, Duke DeMont, KTB,
Kaiser.
Yeah. I wasn't necessarily deep diving. Yeah. I was just maybe Shazamming stuff on nights out and then yeah. just playing stuff I liked. And my mum would listen and my flatmates would listen and that was it.
Can you remember the first time you played out somewhere? Like yeah. the first club night or house party or when it was?
I do. So yeah, in terms of DJing, I properly learnt to DJ when I'd say end of my first year. My friend Mo, sweetheart, taught me to DJ. And we had decks at the station at Leeds Student yeah. Radio. So that was really helpful. And then we got a gig. I think it actually was the January of my second year. So maybe like 2014, let's say, start of the year. And it was me and him for this like student event. And it was like 1,000 capacity club and we were playing. And I think my mixing was a bit ropey, if I'm honest. But luckily he was there to like sort of, you know, the hand of God, like yeah. just jogging the jog wheel just to make sure it's in time.
Yeah.
But everyone was loving it. And like, it was really fun and I was terrified, but because I was with him, I felt fine.
Yeah.
That was my first like proper gig, but my first proper solo gig was a night called Slut Drop in Leeds, which is like a DIY collective. I know, so good. They're still going. They support women and non-binary and trans artists. DJs, quite an experimental kind of bassy vibe, which was what I was into at the time. Yeah. I started DJing on like bass and bassline and grime and garage and like just proper fun fast whoppy tunes. Yeah.
I feel like there's often still a flavor of that in your sets now.
Did you
move away from it and now it's come full circle
because when I moved to London in 2017 I was like on this mission to like make it whatever and I loved like that kind of side of things, like the more bassy stuff, and then I also loved like more traditional house and techno. And then I was working at Mixmag at the time when I was a bit older, and then they were a lot more house and techno orientated. So I was kind of like more influenced to like follow that. And then just general trends, you know, it was more like disco house and
That's what was massive when I was at uni.
Yeah.
And like when I started DJing, it was all disco house.
So I kind of went down that route. But now, interestingly, like there's obviously in terms of like the sounds I'm around and listen to, and especially for my radio shows, I'm literally on the ground of what people are making in the UK. And like over the last like 3-4 years, it's been more murky and darker and
garagey.
Yeah, it's been refreshing so I've naturally just kind of gone back to that. And it's fun because I genuinely love that kind of music.
It's actually funny I like to think it was a few years ago, but maybe it's a bit longer ago than that when I was at uni. Mm. But I mean, not that long ago, it was this like super sugary, light disco, which I actually love. It's amazing. And now like it's the way it's flipped so in such an extreme way is quite interesting.
I think there's a lot of things. I think like post-pandemic, people want things harder, faster, more intense. The younger kids love jungle and like, there's a lot of artists who've helped do that and just I don't know.
It's exciting to see things change. 100%.
I got a bit bored of disco house. And that's why Leeds was great though, because they had like, I remember we saw TQD at fucking Beaverworks.
I went to a TQD night when I was at uni.
Yeah.
On a Sunday
and
night.
And DJ EZ.
DJ EZ, wow, yeah.
Stuff like that was happening. But then you'd have like Good Life would do like, with his student, and it would be like very disco house.
Yeah.
And
I think disco house, it died a little bit of a death when people were just... like when people got so unimaginative with it that they were literally just taking a disco tune,
speeding it up and adding a kick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe like changing the bass line a little bit. But yeah, I still feel very nostalgic for that sound.
Yes.
But
yeah, I get you.
But yeah, I'm glad things have moved on a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
But you touched there on working at Mixmag. I think we skipped ahead a little bit from you leaving uni. So you left uni with this like ambition. You said you were like desperate to come to London and make it, all this kind of thing. What was next for you once you left Leeds?
Well,
was it the job at Mixmag, or was there something before then?
No, it kind of didn't happen like that. It kind of all happened while I was at uni. Like, again, I didn't really know what I was going to do. And this is, if anyone's listening to this, first of all, well done, you're listening to the right podcast. But also, if you're listening to this being like, oh, I want to make it in, it could be anything. You want to be a chef, you want to be a musician, you want to be a DJ. Like, don't be afraid of that dream, and don't be afraid to try something, and just give it a whirl and go with the excitement and go with where the passion is. Because that's what I did. I was like, curious. I was like, I want to try out radio, got a show, and then was enjoying it. And at the time, the station manager of Leeds Student Radio, Matt Tasker, love you, man. He's a producer, I think, at Radio 2. It's so weird bumping into people you've known since you were at uni. It's so weird. But he was like, there's a internship that the BBC do every year for Radio 1 and 1 Extra, and you should all apply for it. So I applied for it when I was 19. I've been doing radio for like 6 months, and I was like, I won't get this, but why not?
Give it a whirl.
I love radio now. I remember getting the interview offer through, and I was like, oh my God. And I was going to go down to London and do an interview and then give you a tour of a live lounge. So I did that.
Put your smart clothes on.
I had a little leopard print jacket on.
Nice.
It was like a blue, like a dark, it was like my pride and joy at the time. It felt so cool. I remember I was at Parklife the day before, which is like a rite of passage, I think, if you're like 18, 19, 20. Good, it's a good festival, but I like being on the other side now of Parklife.
You've earned your stripes now.
I have. I've been a few times. But I remember being at Parklife, and then the next day I had to get from Manchester to London. So I got a train at like 5 a.m., got down there, did an interview. I was just like, just so excited to be there. And like, I saw Fern Cotton, she was still on the station at the time, and we like had a tour of the live lounge, and Sarah Jane Crawford was on 1 Extra at the time. She like waved at me through the studio, and I just had the best time. I felt so inspired and excited, and I was like, oh my God, like, even if I don't get this internship, like, this is amazing. And I got the internship, which was insane. I hadn't thought it through. I had to move to London for 2 months in the summer. It was a paid internship, so I basically just like stayed with my grandma for a bit, who lived in London. And then I stayed in like some university halls in Finsbury Park.
No way.
Yeah. So even now, like, go past, I can walk past it, and I remember that time, 2014. And like the internships was radio production. So it could be whatever you wanted it to be. I worked across like the One Extra music team, like listening to loads of music, sitting in the playlist team meetings, you know, and I was like so excited and overwhelmed. But also their advice to us was like, anything you want to know, just ask, just go up to anyone and ask. So that was really good advice, because even now I do ask a lot of questions all the time. And I think that internship gave me a lot of confidence and drive, and being like, when it was over, I was like, I need to come back here. And I then made it my mission to kind of spend the next couple of years while at uni learning to DJ, figuring out what exactly kind of music I liked playing and how I could get back to that magical place that was the BBC. And a few things happened. One Extra Live came to Leeds that November, so I got to help up there. I was always emailing people. I was a hustler. I was like,
you have to be.
Yeah, I made these contacts and I was like, this is opening a door for me, like this is my chance.
Kick that down.
I did, yeah. And I really used everything from that and started building stuff, and obviously it was helpful that I had BBC to my name, so then I was starting to, like, you know, get guests on and build sort of my brand. And I was taking it very seriously. I think I wasn't really concentrating on my degree, but it wasn't about the degree at the end of the day.
Paid off as well.
Yeah, I might as well have got a radio degree, because I know a lot about radio now.
Yeah.
From just doing it.
So you kind of fell in love, it sounds like, pretty instantly with radio, or BBC radio.
Yeah. I loved it.
So we are skipping a couple of steps here, but the day you found out that you had got your own Radio 1 show.
Yes.
What was that like?
So it was a lot of things. It was something I've been working towards. I had been working towards literally since I was 18 when I started student radio, because I was like, oh, I want to be on Radio 1. And then got to work there as an intern in production. And then it was like my dream. And I was quite vocal about it. I'd literally tell anyone. They didn't even have to ask me. I'd be like, by the way, I'm going to be on Radio 1.
Isn't there a story of you and Harvey from Prosper?
Yes, there is.
Meeting and you being like, I'm going to present on Radio 1, and him being like, I'm going to be
a massive musician. Yeah, yeah. I met him at Canal Mills, which was a club in Leeds, on a night out. We went to this after party. And yeah, he's got such an amazing energy about him. He's a very passionate person. And yeah, we were just talking. It was like 7 a.m. and I was like, I just want to be a radio presenter. Like, I'm Radio 1. He's like, yeah, and I see that. And I just want to be, like, me and my friend Gosha, like, we make music. Like, we want to be like the next Disclosure, like, you know, like make it as producers. I was like, let's do this together.
Yeah.
And
you have.
Yeah, one of my first ever Radio 1 shows I did, Prosper were my guests. Aww. And in the studio. But kind of working towards getting the show, it was a long, hard journey.
Yeah.
To, you know, I started working with BBC Introducing in 2015 in Sheffield. And then I was like the assistant with Introducing in London with like the central team who do all the festivals, all the bookings. Like, they're kind of the route between the Introducing brand and like the network Radio 1 Extra 2-6. That's kind of where they're situated. So I moved down to London in 2017 after graduating to work with Introducing, which was meant to be for 2 months. And I did this job for like 5 years as the assistant from, and I said the whole time, I was like, I want to be a presenter on Radio 1. And they were like, we're going to help you do that. Alongside that, I had a show on Represent Radio in Brixton for 2.5 years, had people like Hi, La Fleur, Hot Since 82, had all sorts of guests, Lala, back in the day, absolutely, like, loads of people came on the show. Cyrita, it was really fun doing that. You're in Represent as well, so you know the vibe.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I love doing Represent.
Yeah, it's the community radio is so important as well, and it's great to see a station dedicated to bringing up like young people and giving back, and like all the stuff they do with the brand deals and opportunities. It's so, like, Sherelle, Naina, Jam Supernova, Jerry, loads of people have come through Cascade, Represent Radio, and it's just such an amazing place. So I have to shout out them. So getting to Radio 1 was hard because I was working in production on the 8th floor of the BBC, seen as former intern, now assistant to introducing. And then there's me trying to convince them to let me, you know, speak on air. And it was hard because some people were pretty brutal. They were like, you're never going to do it. Some people were like, I don't really see you as like a specialist presenter. Like, what do you actually know about music? Some people were like, oh, you're not like a big enough personality to do daytime. Had all these internal things and a lot of setbacks. And if I'd listened to them, I would never have got here. I probably would have like either stayed there and just done production and been unhappy, or maybe I would have gone elsewhere. Maybe I would have joined a different station, or maybe I would have just DJed. I don't know. But I just knew I had to do it. It was like my daily goal. From the age of 18, that's the first thing I'd think about when I wake up, the last thing at night. Everything would be fueled by that motivation of like, I have to be on the radio, which is insane. I would hustle. I moved to London in 2017. I was at every event. I was at Fabric watching panels. I was out going to Phonox and meeting the DJs. I was doing everything. And introducing was amazing, such a great nurturing place. They let me do interviews at festivals and they let me host some of the stages, and they were really supportive. And introducing as well, whether you're like an aspiring presenter or a musician, like use the introducing platform. It's literally the place where you should send your music. It's free. And I think it's the best thing the BBC does.
Yeah.
Genuinely.
Well, also, it's worth saying that you came up with introducing dance, right?
Yeah.
That wasn't a thing before you came along.
Yes.
For anyone who doesn't know, what is introducing dance?
So introducing dance is my current radio show on Radio 1 on Thursdays at 10. And it's literally me listening to all the dance tunes that come in from artists. Anyone can upload. You just need a UK postcode and we'll listen to your music and you can get played. And this radio show works. So we have like networks of introducing shows from in Scotland, in Northern Ireland, in London, in Manchester, all over. And then my show is kind of like a national snapshot of the best dance music coming through. Over the last 3.5 years, I've been the first person to play, God, like early Eliza Rose support. Like we had Eliza Rose and Elle could do a session on my show.
Wow,
and this is the first time I knew Eliza could sing, because they did a cover of like Sweet Dreams. This is like 3 years ago. Barry Can't Swim, first person to play. Hannah Lange. And like, this is like consistent support. And from my show, I'm always sending stuff to the other dance shows or they can cherry pick. And like Danny's always been really good at like picking stuff up and attributing it back to introducing it. It's this whole ecosystem. Emily Nash got her Ministry of Sound record deal. I've made her my first dance floor moment on the show. LF System played so early on. Same with Ewan, same with Talia. Oh God, there's so many
artists.
Yeah,
you can't
Jess
even...
Bays was someone I really championed. There's too many, to be honest. It's insane.
I think your show, it has created like such a community amongst young producers.
Mm.
I remember when I went to your Mixmag lab and the number of people that were there who you've played on the show, like... that was actually the first night I met Meg Ward. Sam Gerling was there.
Meg,
the Tabasco boys
Ken
were there.
And Andy,
Jasper Tigner was there.
Jasper. Was Kimmy there?
I can't remember if Kimmy was there, but there were so many people there. I feel like there's this real like community. There's that amazing moment where you and Ken, you played The Limit, and Ken from Tabasco came up and you guys are just having it, jumping up and down, like loving it.
Yeah.
And I just was, when you started the show, like, was it your intention to sort of create that community, or has that just arisen from doing it?
It's a good question. I think naturally, I guess with the context of who I am as a person, and like, I just love human connection. I think it just naturally has become that. And I think also the success of the show is the timing. It launched in the pandemic, the start of the pandemic, and no one could go out. And also this show hadn't existed before. So there was a real need for this show because there was no club scene and there were fewer opportunities for new artists to be heard in real life and on the radio. So I think it was a part of that. Like it really was like it was a lifeline for me because I had something to do during the pandemic. But yeah, it is a community and I take it very seriously. Like one play genuinely can change someone's life. Like Barry Can't Swim, he's literally said so many times how it's changed his life, being that early support, because then other people then cotton on and then they can support you, and then you can suddenly, it's crazy the power of like network radio plays. So I really cherish it and I love it, and it's a real blessing to do that.
And I think the fact that you take it so seriously and treat it with such love and passion, I think really shines through. And I feel like that's one of the things I love when I listen to the show, is I can tell how much you genuinely love the music and how excited you are to share it and play it. And I think that is one of the best things about radio, isn't it?
Yeah.
And DJing as well. But.
Yeah. And I just love radio. I think it's such an intimate medium.
Yeah. But I want to talk about what you do outside of radio, because that's only actually a portion of what you do, which is crazy to say.
It is crazy, isn't it? It's mad.
You're also DJing all the time.
Yeah.
You have a label, which I want to come on to.
Yeah.
But I want to ask, just how do you find time for all of it?
Yeah, I don't know.
Because you are DJing almost every weekend.
I am. I'm. So this year I decided, because the last 2 years I found really difficult, if I'm honest. I'm 28 now. 27 was hard. I think last year I really was starting to fully burn out. And like from the pandemic is when I really, like, I've always been like a crazy worker and like super determined, but I love it. It doesn't feel like work, but it does eventually wear down on you. And like the pandemic, where a lot of people stopped, I really went into overdrive. I was like overstimulated. I had all these ideas. I was doing all these projects, like Future 1000, like starting my radio show. Like I was going for it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. I have no regrets. But I think, and then coming like post pandemic back into normal life, and I was like Utopia, doing Utopia events, like doing this podcast, DJing, doing the radio show, trying to photo shoots, interviews, Future 1000, launching a report about gender, like all these things, it really took its toll. And like, I was feeling burnt out and shit, to be honest, by the end of last year. But so this year I was like, right, I'm gonna scale back. I'm gonna take out some gigs. So I've been doing less gigs, trying to do the gigs I really want to do that mean something that are going to make me feel good. But because I'm not just a DJ, and like I can't survive, like I can't run off DJing like 2, 3, 4 gigs every single weekend, because Monday morning I need to be ready to go to run my label, to plan my radio show, to do this podcast, to
run an event.
Yeah, whatever it is.
To have time to
literally
live.
Live, but also I do so many things and I thrive off doing so many things. Yeah. So I'm my own worst enemy. But how do I have time? I've learned to juggle. I've learned to prioritize, and I've learned to really try and say no to things. It's hard, but I am better at saying no. But also just learning where I get my energy from. So like I do try and sleep in the week. Like I like to go to bed early. Like I'd like to be asleep by 10:30 if I can get my 8-9 hours. I've been exercising this year. I've been boxing, which I really enjoy. Seeing my friends gives me energy.
Yeah.
Picking my moments when I'm going to like have a drink or a party. Like I'm quite sensible like that, which I'm glad about. I don't know. I think I'm just wired to be able to do this, but I have learned from like hitting like quite low points, my limit, and where I don't want to end up again. So I have been trying to put things in place.
I remember speaking to you over a couple of glasses of Prosecco, as we like to do,
Prosecco.
Last November. And I remember you just being like, I'm done.
I was.
Yeah.
November.
But now see like how you are now, it's like light and dark, like you do. I mean, I don't want to speak on your behalf, but you do seem like you're in a much better place than you were then.
Yeah No, thank you. I am.
Yeah.
I was really struggling. And I think also you don't realize, I think we said this with Tisha, like when you're in it you don't realize how bad you can, or what you're going through. And also especially with the lives we live, which is so
hectic,
so much happening. Sometimes it's not, you don't give yourself time to actually check in with yourself and acknowledge how you're feeling, because there isn't time to breathe and be like, oh my God, I'm really depressed. Or it just suddenly dawned on me, like November, December, especially January this year, I really was struggling actually with my mental health, and just, I felt lost. I didn't know if I wanted to do this anymore, like this career.
You were talking about moving to Spain.
I was going to move to Spain. I was going to like upheave my whole life. I didn't want to do this anymore. I was like, I'm not going to DJ. Because I started to hate DJing as well. Yeah. The first DJ gig I started to, I enjoyed was the Mix Mag Lab in January. Since like maybe summer last year, probably like 6 months yeah. of just, it was making me feel shit. I was like, and I was like, I'm a bad DJ. People hate me. No one wants to come see me. I'm not good enough. And it was like spiraling down. And then I was like, yeah. had to ask myself, who am I? Like, who's Jaguar, the person? Who's Jaguar, the DJ? Like, am I actually happy doing this?
Yeah.
You know, I had to like push everything aside.
Especially when you're doing something that's so aspirational.
Mm.
I think it's hard to actually like question whether it is what you want to do, because it's like, oh, I know a million people would love to do this, but like, shit, like, do I actually want this? Like,
yeah.
And I think also a lot of those things as well are like things that, unless like someone is like close to you, they would never realize. Like, from the outside, everything you were doing was like amazing, and it's only when you actually say like, no, I feel shit, that
yeah,
anyone has any idea. But then it's so hard to say that.
Yeah. I think I felt like I, well, first of all, I didn't want to admit that I wasn't feeling okay. And two, yeah, I felt like I should feel great, because yeah. this year I've done a boiler room and I've launched a report and like I'm financially great and this has happened. And yeah. but I was like, I'd never felt so depressed in my life. Like, I didn't have joy. It wasn't bringing me joy. I felt squashed. Like, the word depressed literally means like you're being, something's pressing down on you and everything's like dark, and I wanted to just like crawl up into a ball and like have the duvet over my head and just like sit there for a few days. Like, that's what I wanted to do. And that's how I felt. And I really had to accept that and kind of hit that low point. And this year I've gone into it, like, I've been doing therapy and just addressing a lot of things, like exercising, like just trying to do things that will help me. And I've really, you know, 8 months on, well, as we record this, I'm feeling the best I've felt in a long time. And it has been very up and down. But the Mix Mag Lab in January was one of the best moments of my life and career, because I was coming out of a very bleak time, and I was excited about something for the yeah. first time in a long time, you know.
That was, I genuinely do mean this, hand on my heart, that was one of my favorite sets I've ever been at. The energy in that room was just like,
yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah,
it was so much fun. I remember like the set coming to an end and just thinking, I want another 2 hours yeah. I want another 2-3 hours of that. Like, it was such a moment, I think, for everyone there, like sharing that with you as well. Like, it really did feel like that. And I think also, like, well done to you for getting yourself back in the place that you're in now, because it's hard. Like, it's hard. Really, really hard. And you're back. I hope
back,
anyway
baby.
I hope.
Yeah, but. No, thank you. Because yeah, I forgot to mention earlier, but I did work at Mixmag for a long time. I started as an intern, then I was the weekend editor, then a freelance writer, and I was hosting the labs from like 2017, 18, 19.
Yeah.
And then pandemic hit, so I stopped hosting. But if you watch any of those labs, I'm like awkwardly doing...
Spot a mini Jaguar.
Yeah, just like, oop.
Yeah.
Amazing presenting experience. Like, some of my early ones are so bad, and I want like to apologize formally to any of those DJs who were like, well, she got my name wrong and said all the wrong things. But anyway, you've got to learn somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, that lab, I just remember I'd done a lot of prep. I got my makeup done before, bought this dress. I was like, I want this to be iconic, and I want to feel like a princess. And I felt ready. There were nerves, but I felt like, I've got this.
Yeah.
I think because I'd done a boiler room the year before, so I was like, I know the deal for a stream. I remember getting there early, having a little mix, and then they're like, okay, people are arriving now. So I went upstairs. And then...
mad queues as well.
My manager...
I only just got in, I think.
Owen was like, outside, it's like a queue out the door and round. And I've worked a Mixed Bag for a long time. I've never seen queues like that. Like... it's insane. And then, yeah, Owen was like grabbing people he recognized so they could all get in,
yeah,
like friends and family kind of thing. And then some people didn't get in, which is insane. Like, even that is insane. I'm so humble and appreciative for everyone who queued to try and to come in or whatever. And then I remember like being upstairs, had a little glass of Prosecco, and then they were like, right, it's go time. Went down.
Had a packet of cheese and onion crisps. Oh,
always. Actually, salt and vinegar McCoy's. There you go. You know? Went down. Vast was warming up and kind of like the sort of sea of people like parted. And then I felt like I was in a film. Like there was like a spotlight on me and I was like walking down. The lights were all blue. And I was like, got to the thing. And I was like, okay. I saw a few faces, friends, family. Yeah. My cousin was actually stood next to me. And I just felt so supported.
Yeah.
I felt so supported. And I felt like this is for all of us. I was like, this is a moment to celebrate you all, because I played so many tunes of people
in the room
who were there. The whole set was like me in a nutshell, but also like it was for everyone. And even though it looks great on the videos and like the TikToks, whatever, but like you can never replicate that feeling and that atmosphere. And genuinely, I go back to that place. If I need to, if I feel sad or anything, I will always remember the appreciation and the support and the love for everyone, and that we're all exuding from our pores in that that mixed mag lab.
One of the greatest sets I've ever been to, as I say, and I've been to a lot of good sets. Oh, so
thanks, babes. Yeah. I loved it.
On to another big thing where you're focusing your energy right now, the label. Yeah. Talk to me about that. So you launched that earlier this year.
Yes.
The Utopia label.
Sometimes you hear the tunes on this podcast because we got the rads, baby.
Yeah, baby. You've hosted artists like Van Damme, Drea, Louis Lennon, Ghost, Junior Simba. You have upcoming releases with some very big artists.
Yeah.
Do you want to drop some names?
Yeah. I mean, they'll probably be out, I imagine, by the time we record this. Flavor D and Paige Eliza got a tune, Miss Dopamine, which is so good. And Mel C.
That is insane.
Has been working on a remix of Spicy, which is a Spice Girls techno song. Mel C, who I've been trying to get the tune to 4 months, pretty much all year, banging on doors, setbacks. No, she doesn't like it. No, go away. Who are you? I'm going to block your number. Stop stalking me, kind of thing. Jokes, not really.
The restraining order's in the
restraining
post.
Restraining order, yeah. I got the tune to Mel C, and she, I was tagging
again,
her.
Again, hustler. That is a hustle.
You can't say I do not hustle because if I tell you I'm going to do something, I will do it.
Yeah.
All right. I will do it. Got the tune to her. And then she was like replying to my DMs and commenting, being like, oh my God, this is amazing. Sent the tune. She started playing it out. And then I think I was on the way to Glastonbury and she was like, babes, I want to remix this tune. And I was like, and then she's been working on a remix and I got it back. And it's like the most insane remix. It's like the Prodigy have like reworked the tune. I didn't think she'd go like the original is heavy what Ghost
and
did.
It's gone heavier.
It's insane. I played it at Boardmasters and it was insane.
Wow.
So I'm hoping we can get that over the line and out on Utopia.
I love that what you started a label like less than 6 months ago and you've already got a Spice Girl releasing with you. That is crazy.
It's
but what made you want to start the label?
It's something I wanted to do for a long time. It felt like the right time. It felt like the final piece of the puzzle in terms of Utopia. So now we've got the club night, we've got the podcast, and we've got the label. And it just kind of builds into it being a community, which is how I see it. And there's just so many aspects of Utopia that just make sense to like me as a person. I think bringing people together, championing people, bringing people up, like trying to be that plug to like help people out. And like, I want to kind of continue supporting new artists in general. And I don't know, it just made sense. And I love every single tune genuinely with my whole heart. Like a lot of them I've been playing in my sets over the last few years. And now we're able to release them and like give them their flowers. And a lot of these artists is their first label signing or it does a lot of things for them.
You opened your Mixmag lab with Van Damme, didn't you?
Opened with Van Damme. I've played...
Drea's been played in almost all of your sets.
I know, yeah.
I remember you playing Drea's tracks in Ibiza.
Yeah, and she was
there. And that was so fun,
I love that girl. And I love...
She's great.
People should pay attention to her. And I think I really think she's going to have a big impact on dance music. Just music. She really is like musically so talented, knows her stuff, knows her vision and her integrity
as well.
Focus, like, yeah.
And just good energy.
We love Drea.
Shout out to Drea, yeah.
But I could say the same for all the artists,
yeah,
to be honest. And there's some, yeah, I'm always looking for stuff. I'm not releasing too much stuff. I'm kind of like cherry picking and kind of approaching artists that I'm already talking to. And
yeah,
every release is different musically, but it's just reflective of my taste. And pretty much all of them are like club, fun club tunes with a little twinkle.
I mean, we've gone everywhere in this
episode. We have.
I've really enjoyed it. So thank you for being so open and speaking about so many things. Because I know you did say to me, I just can't ask you any maths questions. So we did go.
Is there a surprise maths question?
There's not a surprise maths question, but we did go to a lot of places. I mean, you've spoken really openly about your mental health, about your past.
I didn't speak about the Veronicas for once.
Did we not speak about the
I thought.
You got to get them in at the end.
Listen, we've got a whole segment in the Pretty Girl episode.
Yeah.
So if you want to hear about Veronica's, it's about 30 minutes in.
I still feel like there's so many other things that we could talk about right now. There's a whole load of stuff, but we'll save it for another day.
Another day.
Just quickly, what is coming up next for you?
God. You know what? This is the first year as well where I haven't been too bothered about what's next, because I'm always like, what's next,
yeah,
I want to do all this stuff now. And I was like, Savvy, I was like, I just want to enjoy this year, not have a breakdown, enjoy DJing and grow Utopia, and those things I have all done this year, which has been incredible. And it's been my favorite year work wise because I felt in control and I felt at the top of my game and I felt fulfilled. So in terms of what's next, more of that, and I just want to keep growing the vision, the community, doing nourishing soul shows, meeting amazing people, and just connecting with people in every single way. You know, that's what broadcasting is, isn't it? Is like sending out a message and like receiving stuff back. And I just want to do that and continue in this vein because I really feel happy and I'm just having a good time. I am a bit tired, but you know, you can sleep when you're dead, right?
Exactly. You can fuel yourself on 4 coffees a day or whatever you're doing right now.
Oh my God. Yeah, maybe slightly less coffee, maybe. We'll see.
Utopia Talks is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.